Fancy a game?
Tyler Bischoff is technically correct.
And another shot, and they score! Jake Bischoff, the defenseman! Rebound, Bischoff! He shoots, he scores! Bischoff on the backhand!
Hello, Ryan Reeves versus Tom Wilson. That was fun. Preston Laird, UNLV assistant basketball coach, will join us a little bit later in the show. I'm going to make Jared read Facebook comments, too. His favorite thing to do on this show. But the Golden Knights beat the Capitals. 5-3. We're going to do Golden Knights here. We're going to do, like, serious sports talk radio. Then we're going to have some fun in Spanish. Jesus and Herbert were tremendous last night. And then we're going to do some dumb stuff. So serious to fun to dumb. That's the scale we're going with the Golden Knights here.
I prefer to work more on a bell curve of dumb, serious, dumb. So,
that game, by the way, was awesome. Just on the standpoint of, like, lead changes. Golden Knights scored the first goal. We're up 1-0. Then the Capitals took a 2-1 lead. Then all of a sudden the Golden Knights scored two goals in 16 seconds, and they're up 3-2. Then they blow that, so it's 3-3. And then, Nate Schmidt scores the game winner and an empty netter, and it's 5-3. So, like, you get a late game-winning goal from Schmidt. You get Ryan Reeves and Tom Wilson trying to fight each other but not really fight each other the whole time. Hell, Alex Ovechkin was out there just trying to hit people. The Capitals were down a goal in the final, like, 30 seconds. And instead of trying to keep the puck in the offensive zone, Alex Ovechkin ignored the puck and just went to hit somebody. Like, Ovechkin did not care if they won that game. He was just trying to hit people. So that was a terrific game. Like, it was just wonderful to watch. You normally have a lot of regular season hockey games that are just like, yeah, whatever. But that one was great. Now the serious sports talk radio. Is Ryan Reeves a dirty player? Should he be suspended? Kicked out of the league? Did Tom Wilson deserve it? Is the rest of the league happy about it? So, Ryan Reeves and Tom Wilson. They were going at each other the whole night, constantly hitting each other. Reeves tried to hit Wilson, and Reeves ended up on the ice instead of Wilson. Like, that didn't work out very well for Ryan Reeves. And then later on, Reeves got a big hit on Wilson, and Wilson tried to, like, chase him down. Reeves pushed him to the ice again and then laughed at him. That was hilarious. It was good. And then it culminated with Ryan Reeves delivering a blindside shoulder-to-shoulder hit to Tom Wilson. Wilson knocked out of the game. Reeves kicked out of the game, given a 5-minute major penalty and a game misconduct. So, all right, I want to play the Ryan Reeves audio first. This is Ryan Reeves after the game talking to the media about that hit.
I thought he was just looking at his pass and ran into a lion in the jungle.
I love that there's the media member already starts going.
So first off,
the giggles have started. He could have said, you know, he ran into a Plymouth in the city, and that media member would have gone, no matter what.
First off, credit to the Golden Knights for letting him talk. I'm sure he wanted to because he loves to talk. But I complain about teams not providing enough media availability or whatever, so do want to point out, like, good job. Like, you made Ryan Reeves available when you didn't have to after he got kicked out of a game. Two, Ryan Reeves should speak after every game. I know I've said this before, but healthy scratch, best game of his life, worst game of his life. Hell, when he retires, they just need to bring him back and pay him just to give press conferences because he's terrific. Like, he's wonderful. That's what we want. Also, excellent job by Ryan Reeves to troll Tom Wilson. Because if we rewind to game one of the Stanley Cup final, Tom Wilson had a questionable hit on Jonathan Marsh's show. After the game, when Tom Wilson was asked about it, this was Tom Wilson's quote. I think he'd probably say he shouldn't have admired his pass. I was just finishing my check. And Ryan Reeves brings that right back with he was just looking at his pass. It's a terrific job by Ryan Reeves.
He ran into a lion in the jungle.
It's so good.
Lions live on the savannah.
I know. That's the weird thing. People always say lions in the jungle, and they're not.
Yeah, they don't live there.
So, but we'll ignore that. That being said, It's a bad hit. It's late. It's away from the puck. Ryan Reeves has full control over whether or not he wants to hit Tom Wilson. You often hear the argument in, like, football. It's like, oh, what do you want him to do? It's a full-speed, full-contact sport, which is usually a bad argument anyways. But you can't even use that argument here. Like, Ryan Reeves had 100% control over whether or not he hit Tom Wilson, and he decided to hit Tom Wilson.
Isn't that similar to what Draymond would always argue whenever he would kick people in the gentleman?
Oh, it's just my shooting motion.
Yeah, like...
But you can't even... Nobody made that argument, but you can't even make that argument, really, that Ryan Reeves didn't have a choice. Like, he very clearly had a choice to hit him or not hit him. And then when he says things like, he ran into a lion in the jungle, like, that's kind of him saying, yeah, I did that on purpose. But that is, like... It wasn't to the head, but it was definitely on purpose. And, like, those are the... Those types of hits are the ones that the NHL has to get rid of, because those types of hits, there's literally no need for that at all in the sport of hockey. And, like, Tom Wilson makes those hits all the time, and he gets suspended for those types of hits a lot. He just had one not too long ago and didn't get suspended for it. But those are the types of things you have to get out of here. So, like, I think they did the right thing in terms of... I think they got it completely right in terms of five-minute major, game misconduct for Reeves, and then no suspension. He's not getting suspended. Like, I think they got that right. Maybe if you do suspend him, that's fine, too. But I think they got the calls in the game right. But you have to kind of get rid of those hits. Like, those are the things that... Like, not that the NHL is dying or the NFL is dying, but both of those leagues, these are the types of things you have to get out of there because they're pointless. Like, they serve you no. I mean, hell, Ryan Reeves put his team at a disadvantage by doing that. They had to kill a five-minute penalty after that. They did, but they had to kill a five-minute penalty. Like, he made it harder for his team to win that game by doing that. I don't know. Gerard Gallant also said it wasn't late at all, which is the biggest lie he's probably ever said. Like, the puck is almost at center ice, and they're in the face-off circle. So, I don't know. He said it wasn't late. That's kind of ridiculous. But anyways, now the fun stuff. Jesus Lopez, Herbert Castro on the call, ESPN Deportes. First goal of the game was Ryan Reeves.
Ahí lo tiene y toma la papá, le lanza Scooby-Doo y recuperando. Y un disparo nuevamente, Chase Theodore. Otra vez para Oscar Lindbergh. Ahí está. Hermoso.
Hermoso. Also, yes, I do believe Jesus said Scooby-Doo at the beginning of that call.
I was just, he said it, and we looked at each other like, he said Scooby-Doo, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. All right. So
I love this.
This one is special because the Golden Knights scored two goals in 16 seconds of game time. We're going to play the entire audio that starts before Pierre-Édouard Belmar scores through the celebration and the face-off into the Cody Eakin goal, because it's tremendous, because they're still talking about the Belmar goal, and then it's like, oh, God, they scored again. It's great.
No le dan oportunidad. Carpenter hacia aquel costado izquierdo. Otra vez. Ryder McNabb, que saca un disparo. ¡Gol! Se hace la fiesta. ¡Qué jugada, Herbert Castro!
Así es.
Es un disparo de Ryder McNabb. Ahí está el desvío. Y es
Belmar.
Belmar precisamente con la desviada.
¿Sabes qué? Me parece un premio para Pierre-Édouard Belmar, que yo pensé que después de ese planchón que le pegaron atrás de la portería
no iba a poder jugar.
No iba a poder regresar, porque yo realmente lo vi muy mal de la cintura. Realmente le costaba deslizarse, le costaba...
¡Uno más! ¡Ahí está!
¡Oh!
¡Gol! ¡Gol! ¡Cody Eakin con el tercero de la noche para el equipo de Vegas Golden Knights!
Chamacos, deme tiempo de terminar el primer comentario. Cayó el tercero de la noche, mis amigos. De repente explotó el equipo de Vegas Golden Knight.
That was great.
Una más.
like,
oh my God, they scored again, guys.
So great.
Calm down. We got to break down another goal. Yeah.
Oh, man.
It's terrific. Like, it's unbelievable. All right, we also have, this is the game winner from Nate Schmidt.
Shea Theodore por el centro. Nate Schmidt. Va por él nuevamente Shea Theodore. 20 segundos de power play. Se viene por el costado izquierdo. Ahora por el centro. Vegas Golden Knights con todo. Se lo quita con la pita. ¡Disparo! ¡Oh!
¡Qué golazo! Señores.
All right, we got one more because an empty. God, I love when they score a lot of goals at home. It's terrific. We just get more and more Jesus.
Y este es Ovechkin. Ovechkin, que ya está armado.
10 segundos.
Ahí está. Sale el disparo.
It's the best part of our show, us playing a different language.
I mean, it's the part that makes me smile the most.
Yeah.
That when we do really stupid things with lots of imaging that typically end with you just saying like two or three sentences and then that's it.
All right, let's do a stupid thing. It's Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah. Are the Golden Knights in a playoff spot?
No. They are tied with 31 points with the Sharks for the last spot in the Pacific for the playoffs, but the Golden Knights have played one more game. Therefore, San Jose State still has that final playoff spot in the Pacific Division. They're only 2 points back of Anaheim for number two in the Pacific and five back of Calgary for first. Anaheim hosts Chicago tonight. San Jose hosts Carolina tonight. So if San Jose loses tonight, the Golden Knights would be tied and equal on games played as well. The wild card spots, they're 1 point back of Minnesota, 2 points back of Dallas. So they're right on the edge, Jared. They're right on the edge. They still got three games to get into this playoff spot by the end of Hanukkah.
And didn't they just beat probably their toughest opponent?
Yeah, in this stretch, yes, absolutely. Beating the Capitals. Now they get the Blackhawks at home on Thursday.
You know if I'm right. We're producing like a 7 to 8 minute montage of me being right, right?
Is that what it is? You right? You just proposed it.
I know.
I don't think you ever predicted they would be. You just were like, what happens if they're in by the end of Hanukkah?
I know, but I get such small victories that I'm taking them.
Mazel Tov.
Technically Correct, brought to you by Boyd Gaming. Try out the Be Connected sports betting app. It is the easiest way to bet on sports in Vegas, and it is free to download.
There are so many ways to be satisfied at the Orleans Hotel and Casino. Enjoy cocktails and steaks the way nature intended at Alder and Birch. Visit the newly updated Prime Rib Loft. Experience the all-new Bailiwick Gastro Pub to share unique dining selections, try new craft draft beers, and enjoy great live music. Dine at Andori Asian Kitchen for authentic Chinese entrees, or choose from a large selection of sushi and Japanese cuisine. Check out the all-new Copper Whisk Cafe, open 24 hours with a menu that is sure to entice any palate. So savor the latest and greatest variety of flavors at the Orleans.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants.
No, I don't want to go to a party in your pants.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants!
Bischoff's Briefs.
Very well.
UNLV is considering moving the student section at Thomas and Mack.
So thanks to Rebel JTO on Twitter for tweeting out an email. But some context here if you're unaware. First half of games at Thomas and Mack, the opposing team shoots into the basket by the UNLV student section. Second half of games, the opposing team shoots into the basket, and behind it is a media section. And since I've been covering the team, I've heard this complaint every single year. The email that they tweeted out looked like it was some sort of survey, or even just sort of like, hey, what do you think about this thing, where they're asking fans, hey, what do you think about us moving the student section to the other side of the court? They sort of, UNLV puts in there, like, most arenas have the student section behind the basket for the opponent in the second half, not the first half, and they're exploring options. But I like it.
Yeah, I mean, it also is funny that you said you've been hearing this complaint since you've been covering UNLV, and it's just we hire a athletic director, and all of a sudden, hey, you know, the rest of college basketball does it this way. Why don't we?
I honestly just want to see my seat get moved somewhere better.
Well, I would just like the media section not to be on weird red risers that make it painfully obvious that there's only like four media members.
I just want to be able to see. I didn't know Cincinnati banked in a three until I went back and rewatched it, because I'm behind the basket and I can't actually see the ball go in the basket most of the time. They just turn around and run down the other end of the floor, and I'm like, oh, they made that shot. Like, I can't see things all of the time. It's terrible. So I just want to get moved somewhere better. Like, that'd be much, much more fun. So yeah, put the student section where I am and put me somewhere else. That'd be great.
Behind the other basket.
Oh, God, that's where you're going to put me too.
The Golden Knights did not allow a power play goal against the Capitals.
They were shorthanded for 10 minutes and 38 seconds, and they did not score. Most of that 10 minutes was thanks to Ryan Reeves.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm more confused about the 38 seconds. Where did the random 38 seconds come
because,
from?
Because the Golden Knights were on a power play, and then they took a penalty in the middle of a power play, so there was some overlap, so it wasn't a clean two-minute power play for the Capitals. The Golden Knights, I have no evidence or stats to back this up. I think the Golden Knights have to lead the league in taking penalties while they're on the power play, because it feels like every game they have a power play that ends with them taking a penalty and going to 4-on-4 all the time. But the Capitals have the 7th best power play in the NHL. Golden Knights have the 3rd best penalty kill in the NHL. That's been one of their strengths all season. Like, we've talked about Fleury having bad games. We've talked about the defensemen being terrible at different stretches. We've talked about them just not being able to score for long stretches of the season. The penalty kill's pretty much been great the whole year. So, they're good at something for the whole season.
So hold on, though. When they are even strength, that's when they're giving up the most goals, or?
They're kind of. Yeah, they're better when there's only 4 Golden Knights on the ice. That is a true statement. I don't know if it's still true, but they were nearly scoring per 60 minutes. They were nearly scoring as many goals shorthanded as they were at even strength.
All right. Weird.
Cal running back Biagio Ali Walsh.
Man, you... terrible. Biagio Ali Walsh. I almost messed it up too. Biagio?
Whatever.
So this is Muhammad Ali's grandson.
Oh, okay, cool.
He went to Bishop Gorman.
Cool.
Was a freshman at Cal last year, had 4 carries for 9 yards the entire season.
Not a good per.
But he played in 10 games, I assume on special teams, so he didn't get to do the 4 game and then redshirt thing. Is he coming back to Vegas? I know you don't know the answer to that. That was more of a rhetorical question.
Well, Max Gillum on Twitter tweeted out, come home.
Yep.
We do need a new...
Yeah, UNLV loses 3 of its top 4 running backs in Lexington Thomas, Xavier Campbell, and Evan Owens. Charles Williams is the only one back.
God knows he's going to get fed.
So, Biagio Ali Walsh from Bishop Gorman to Cal. Back to UNLV. I don't know. I don't know if it's going to happen, but let's start the rumors.
New Mexico lost to New Mexico State by 35 points.
That's a lot. It's a lot of points to lose by.
I mean, at one point, the Phoenix Suns were on pace last night to score 32 points in 4 quarters, so...
Were they playing New Mexico State from the WAC?
They were playing Sacramento Kings from the WAC.
35 points is a bunch. What's funny to me is that Marvin Menzies leaves New Mexico State for UNLV. Paul Weir replaces him for one season, and then he leaves New Mexico State for New Mexico. Paul Weir, in his 1 year at New Mexico State, went 28-6, made the NCAA tournament. So since Marvin Menzies left New Mexico State, New Mexico State is 63-13. Menzies is 35-37. And since Paul Weir left, he is 23-17, while New Mexico State is 35-7. So they both left, but New Mexico State is still this like power in the whack that just keeps winning a lot. Meanwhile, Menzies and Weir are like, we're trying to build a program, guys. And oh yeah, Paul Weir's 0-4 against New Mexico State now.
Can I flip it on its head and say Menzies built a powerhouse, left,
apparently,
and then everyone else is just
apparently.
Yeah, I mean, it's all we put in the groundwork, and so it's sort of just turnkey operation.
Yeah, it runs
now.
Itself. They just pay me to show up and watch them practice. They got this down. So, yeah, but New Mexico State, they might win the Mountain West if they were in it.
The Raiders have signed running back C.J. Anderson.
Why? I don't know.
Maybe they're under the cap floor and they have to...
I don't know.
They need to make some late payments in order to make sure that they don't get penalized next year.
C.J. Anderson is 27 years old, so he's not the 32-year-old that we saw John Gruden signing throughout the offseason. But
he hasn't been effective since he was 25 years old, and even then was only effective through four games.
He was with Carolina this year.
Well, he was with Carolina this year?
Yeah, hadn't played nine games with the Panthers. 24 carries. He tried out for Kansas City when Kareem Hunt got waived, but they ended up signing Sharkhandrick West, so C.J. Anderson was like, all right, I'll go sign for the Broncos. Or the Broncos. He used to play for the Broncos. I'll go sign for the Raiders.
He knows how to play AFC West football.
That's right. I don't know what the Raiders are doing, though. Like, if you look at their backfield, they have Doug Martin, Jalen Richard, and DeAndre Washington. And it just seems like a pointless move to bring in C.J. Anderson. Unless, like, do they think he'll be on the team next year?
I mean, if you can get him on like a 2-year deal
as your backup running back?
Yeah.
Because if you look,
he might know something about Denver that might be helpful schematically.
They only have DeAndre Washington and Mike Alstott Jr., Chris Warren.
Yeah.
Those are the only two running backs under contract for the Raiders next year. So I guess you could look at it and say, all right, Doug Martin, Marshawn Lynch are gone. Jalen Richard is gone. Yeah, let's bring in C.J. Anderson. He'll be the backup, and you go get a better running back. He'll be Le'Veon Bell's backup next year.
Oh, yeah, because he's not going to the Chiefs.
Le'Veon Bell, Kareem Hunt, and C.J. Anderson. That's your backfield next year.
All right, can I tell you something? C.J. Anderson, in his career, has three total fumbles.
The Raiders running backs fumbled three times on Sunday.
It may just be one of those, I don't care if you get me 1 yard, just don't drop it. (laughs) 11,478 people have ordered the Golden Knights specialty license plate.
Story in the Review Journal by Mick Akers. Over 11,000 makes it the sixth most popular specialty plate in Las Vegas, or in Nevada, I should say. In 2 months, you don't seem enthused by license plate talk.
The specialty license plates. I love this city. The specialty license plates. Not for me.
The 150th anniversary plate is the number one specialty plate in Las Vegas. Or I keep saying that, in Nevada. I got to consider this whole state here. Lake Tahoe is number two. And something called United We Stand is number three.
Okay.
I don't know what that one looks like.
I may be confusing it for something else because I'm talking about when people put classic.
You're talking about vanity plates.
Maybe. Oh, or they put classic rod on like a 1991
oh, that happens everywhere.
Honda Civic.
And you, should go to, like, you should go to Mississippi. That is the thing to do in Mississippi.
Like, just put couldn't pass smog. Like, don't lie to me and say that that's a classic rod. That's just late model couldn't pass smog.
You want a comparison, though?
Sure.
Nevada Wolfpack plates, 10,431. UNLV plates, 6,412.
Well, that's weird because I only see UNLV plates in Las Vegas. So, yeah, actually, that doesn't make any sense.
That settles it, though. Better fans in Reno than they are in UNLV. The license plate, that is the only judgment we need for who has the better fan base.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff, brought to you by Boyd Gaming. You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
I'm an expert at what I do. You know, I'd like to think that you're an expert in what you do. So, or one in training, because you're a young guy.
Technically Correct here on ESPN 1100, 100.9 FM. And joining us now, assistant coach for the UNLV Running Rebels, Preston Laird. Preston, how you doing this morning?
Tyler, I'm great, man. How are you?
Good. Good to have you on. So,
thanks for having me.
First thing I want to ask, you were talking about a little bit earlier, but the possibility of the student section getting moved at inside Thomas and Mack, as like a coaching staff, do you guys care at all about where that is, or if the opponents are shooting into the media section versus the student section in the second half?
Any competitive advantage that we can give ourselves on our home court, I think the coaches are in favor of. Now, it's not always that easy. I think there's some things with seats and season ticket holders, and I think there's a lot of people that have been in those seats for a long time. I think they got to kind of get everybody in the same room and work out some of those logistics. But absolutely a competitive advantage. I think one of the games that really stands out to me was last year against Arizona. There were some big free throws late. I think Alonzo Trier was shooting them. And our student section is on the other end, and he's shooting into the media. But most definitely, I mean, you look around the country, the Arizona State's got the curtain of distraction, and just the lively student sections, the signs, the activity, the noise, I mean, those are all advantages that we're kind of absent right now. But, you know, it's not just that one part of it that for that to be able to happen. But so, yeah, no, that would be good for us if it could happen, though.
In the meantime, would you like to give thunder sticks to the media section so that we can be a distraction?
Let's do it, man. That's a terrific idea.
So, Preston Laird with us. You go from this offseason from director of basketball operations to assistant coach. What's been the biggest change for you in the last few months?
You know, I think just kind of reallocating my time and then having the opportunity to work more hands-on with the players from a basketball perspective. You know, obviously they're student athletes and they're here to develop themselves off the court as much as they are on the court. But let's be honest, that really makes them tick. So you kind of have a platform, you have an opportunity to help them kind of create and develop good habits through basketball. And whether they realize that's what they're doing or not, they're becoming more disciplined. If they're on the basketball court, then usually they'll become more disciplined in other areas of their life. So just kind of having that platform and be able to work with them daily in an area that they're extremely passionate about. It's not so much, you know, hey, how's academics, and we got the community service thing, and they just engaged at a little bit higher level there, so you can really kind of get through to them on that level. So
you were the interim for a little while before officially getting the full-time job. What was your pitch to Marvin Menzies to say, hey, just give me this job full-time, let's do it?
You know what, it wasn't so much a pitch. Coach knows me about as well as my own family. He knows what I can bring to the table. I have a body of work with him, you know, whether it was something small, some task he gave me 5 years ago to, you know, a major task. He knows my effectiveness. He knows my skill set. I didn't have to really pitch him. You know, it was just kind of, you know, trusting that he was looking at it from a 30,000-foot view, evaluating the program and putting the guy in the right spot. I mean, we've had plenty of conversations. You know, when we first came here, I was with him. I was one of the first guys with him in Vegas. And I was in that capacity, in that role, you know, until he had hired his staff. You know, Coach Jeter had hurt his hip for a while. I had to do a little recruiting and on-court instruction during that time. So there were a few instances before that, and we had talked about it. And he knows what I want to do in the business, and I just kind of trusted him and believed in him, and as we all do. And he made the best decision for the program, and it worked in my favor, and I'm grateful, and I'm not going to let him down.
So wait, you said Rob Jeter, when he was here, he hurt his hip. So coaching works the same way as for players? Somebody gets hurt, somebody's got to step in and be ready to coach?
Yeah, so there's some NCAA rules where if a coach is, I forget the phrasing on it, but basically if he's out of commission, whether it's an illness or an injury or something, you can actually bump up temporarily somebody else on the staff to assume those responsibilities. There was an instance when I think Coach Dieter had some kind of hip replacement or surgery going on in his hip. That was the case.
That is great. Do you have to like go to the NCAA and say this is a legitimate injury, so we need a backup assistant coach for the time being?
Yeah, exactly. And then there's obviously the coaching test that you have to pass. So, exactly.
I'm curious, what's the furthest you've traveled for recruiting purposes?
Africa.
Okay. How often have you been?
I've been twice in 2 years with Coach. So we've been over there, and then been to actually, you know what, Pat, I don't even know if I'm allowed to talk about that. I better stop.
We won't get Preston Laird in trouble.
You better got me in trouble.
Just ignore that. That didn't happen. All right, we'll talk about this year's team. I'm curious, just I'll kind of leave this open ended. How good do you think this team is defensively?
You know, I think they're good. It's tough to kind of. You can't take the offensive end of the ball, and you can't take the defensive ball, and you can't separate them because they both go hand in hand. Especially in the half court, I think we're a really good defensive team. I think we've got good length. I think our off the ball positioning, our activity off the ball, subtle details and ball screen coverages is a lot better. What's hurting us right now is the turnovers. Because when you turn the ball over and Valpo scores 31 points off of turnovers, you know, that puts way too much pressure on your defense, and you're giving up easy baskets. So if we can take care of the ball a little bit better, I think we could be a high-level defensive team. But I like where we're at. I think statistically, I know you're an analytical guy. I think statistically we've improved in a lot of categories. The biggest Achilles heel for us right now on the defensive end is defending the three-point line. We're struggling in that area a little bit, but we are keeping attempts down. So that's good. But we could be pretty good defensively. We just got to keep working hard, keep getting better, and you know, we'll see.
Well, so on the turnovers, when you guys go back and watch these, how much of them are you saying, wow, these are just unforced and it's really an us problem? And how much of it is like, oh, wow, Cincinnati or Valpo, whoever it is like, wow, they really caused those? Like, how are you guys sort of analyzing those individually?
So much of it is us. I mean, there's some stuff some teams are doing, to create some turnovers, absolutely. But the majority...
No. Did we lose? We lost Preston?
I don't know.
We turned the interview over.
Uh-oh.
All right.
Yeah, we lost
there
him.
There we go.
I love that sound on radio.
It has such finality to it, though, when you hear that sound. It answers all of the problems. Okay.
Hello, sir.
We lost Preston Laird.
Yeah.
I think we might possibly have Preston Laird back. Silence. All right, we got Preston back.
Yeah, we got him back.
All right.
No, the turnovers, certainly some things our opponents are doing are creating turnovers. You know, the post-doubles early on in the year. But most of it is us. You know, most of these turnovers, I think we have like 115 turnovers on the year. We've actually gone back and watched all of them. It's some passing and catching issues. But if you look at the two teams, you know, LMU, we had 24, Valpo, we have 25. Both of them are pack line defenses, which for fans, it's not an aggressive denial, you know, crazy ball pressure type defense. It's more of like a Virginia based defense where we're packing it in, trying to protect the paint, protect the basket, and contest shots, make the other team shoot jumpers. And for us to have 24 and 25 turnovers against a pack defense that's not trying to create turnovers is very indicative of, you know, the fact that it is just us and our youth and inexperience and extremely correctable mistakes. So it's encouraging, but it's discouraging at the same time.
A couple other things with this team offensively. Noah Robotham, he shoots 39% from three at Akron, but he struggled this year. you tend to believe the 3 years worth of data is better than the 7 games worth of data. But like, do you guys need to get him better shots, or is it just simply a small sample size and it just need to wait it out? Like, how are you guys looking at, okay, Noah struggled from three, what needs to be better, or does it just need to kind of wait it out?
First of all, you know, I think Noah's a great player, and I'm with you a lot. I've looked at Noah's stats from Akron for 3 years, and again, like, just like you, I'm a stat guy. So like, he was like maybe 39, 37, and 38 in his 3 years there, with a high number of attempts, with a 3-assist turnover ratio. So like, I'm with you. The body of work that he has in 3 years at the Division I level, playing at Akron, the games that he's won. Like, I'm not worried about Noah, and none of us are. Noah works hard. He's a level-headed kid. He has a high care factor in what we're trying to do. And I think eventually, like, the law of averages will play out for him. I think the worst thing we can do for Noah is overthink it and talk about it too much and just kind of let him keep working and keep building his confidence slowly. And he's been out for a year. He got out of a rhythm, and I think he'll find his rhythm again. I've full confidence, as we all do, in Noah's ability to shoot the ball. So it'll come.
I got a two-part question for you on offensive rebounding, because usually, or for the most part in college basketball, offensive rebounding is sort of declining each season, but Marvin Minzie's teams are always great at it. So, one, why is that? And two, like, how do you guys as a staff value the trade-off in getting maybe an extra possession here or there versus giving up some extra transition baskets?
Yeah, so it's kind of one of those battles, you know, war within the war type deals. You know, you look at like a Carolina, right, who plays extremely, extremely fast, but they're also one of like the best offensive rebounding teams in the country. If you can establish like your presence on the offensive boards, it's a toughness stat, first of all, but you put a whole lot more pressure on them to secure a rebound before they can run. So it's actually kind of a defensive strategy as much as it is an offensive strategy. But it's just something we emphasize and something we harp on daily with our guys. It just goes back to our length and athleticism, our aggressiveness and our toughness that, we want to go get that second offense going, get a shot up when we don't turn it over, and go get the rebound and try to get a better shot. You know, those are good kick-out three opportunities. But, again, it's just kind of a toughness, something we emphasize daily in practice. That we believe moves the needle for us offensively and defensively. And the guys really embrace it.
So you guys are, not to skip ahead for you, but you guys are going to the Diamond Head Classic in Hawaii. I'm curious, are you excited to spend Christmas in Hawaii, or would you rather be home with family?
I'm excited to be with the Running Rebel basketball. I mean that wholly. Like, this is my family. I have a family back home, no question, but they love and support me and what I'm trying to do. And we have a really good group from coach down to our managers. We have a loving group. We have a passionate group, and we have a supportive group in each other. And I'm excited to be in Hawaii and compete. I don't know if that makes me a terrible person, but or not. You know, I'm excited about the holidays as much as I am about competing. But no, we have a good group, and wherever we are, whatever the day is, I'm just happy to be a part of it.
Home is Memphis, right?
Yes.
What's the best barbecue you've eaten in Las Vegas?
Oh, you know what? I recently went to, I don't know if this counts or not, I went to Fox's in Boulder City.
Okay, we'll count it.
Would you count it?
We'll count it.
It was really good, man. It was really, really good. There's a spot over here by the school, too. I think the owner or somebody's like from Arkansas or something. I forgot the name of it, but that place was pretty good too.
That's the
Costa Sierra.
That's where you got to go. The people that are owned by somebody that moved here from somewhere in the south.
That's
the key. There's a place called Tennis Seasoning somewhere in like the southwest part of Las Vegas that's pretty good too.
Really? Okay, so I'll check that out.
I was wondering how Preston Laird ranked the best barbecue in Vegas, and obviously you have to leave Vegas to go to Boulder City, so maybe not that great. But he is Preston Laird, assistant coach with the UNLV Running Rebels. Preston, we appreciate your time today.
Hey, thanks, man. Appreciate that.
All right. That was good, aside from losing him halfway through.
Yeah, and getting my favorite sound in radio. I don't know. I really enjoy, if it's on someone else's show,
But if you're running the show, you don't like it that much?
Yeah, it's just incredibly embarrassing.
So. I love you. I love this guy.
Yesterday we had Jake Bischoff on the show. Today we talked to the new coach of a 15th place USL team. Are we hooking the brand of the show up to the wrong thing?
No.
These are the right things?
Yeah.
Okay. Are we sure?
I'm 100% positive that this is our lane.
This is our path to stardom.
Well, I don't know about stardom, but this is our path.
All right.
This is, no one else is going to this well.
Okay.
Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
On our way to stardom. All right, best thing we do. Not really.
No, that's
the laziest
Jesus.
Thing
that's...
I do. Laziest thing I do is I make Jared Reed Facebook comments. Monday we talked about UNLV's attendance. They're on pace for lowest average ever at Thomas and Mack. Posted some audio to Facebook and asked people, hey, what will make UNLV fans show up to games? Now, Jared Reed's Facebook comments.
Cody Wilcox says, cheaper tickets are a winning product. UNLV fans are a fair weather bunch. I don't know if you can say we're fair weather. We've been trying for a really long time. It just, there's not been a whole lot of success.
I mean, if you look at the Thomas and Mack, it's hard to argue they're not fair weather fans.
Okay. So you expect them after a run of like, when was the last time they made the tournament?
Yeah, 2013. No, I don't. I'm just saying all fan bases are fair weather to some extent.
Yeah. Like the fact that we were even averaging, what was it, 8,000? To me is like, not bad. All right.
But it's not actually 8,000.
I know. It's never whatever they say. Otherwise, the Marlins wouldn't have been able to sell themselves for $1.2 billion. Joe Pina says, nice. We'll be able to get a good seat.
I like that optimism.
Has he been to a game? You can always get a good seat.
Yeah.
Jason Houston, go to local schools / basketball leagues and give away upper bowl tickets, 2 per kid. Get people in the door. They will buy a hot dog or drink. Football should do the same. I actually don't hate this idea.
If you went up to a middle schooler and gave him 2 UNLV basketball tickets, what would he do with those?
Well, I would probably try to give them to the teacher or give them to like the superintendent. I wouldn't try to approach a small child and be like, I've got tickets to the sporting event. That's how you wind up on a register. Joe Jensen says, cheap tickets, $15 to $25, $1 pretzel, $2 dogs, $3 nacho, $4 beers. It's called 1-2-3-4 economics.
That's my favorite one, because I believe he's trying to say economics 101 when he says 1-2-3-4 economics. That's terrific. I enjoy that one so much.
Dwayne is back. Why is there this sudden attack on the basketball coach and the basketball team? ? Lowercase, why don't you criticize the football coach and his team? At least this coach can actually coach a team to a 500 record or higher versus quality opponents. As an alum of UNLV, this is embarrassing. Ellipses not used correctly. How basically now there's this witch capital hunt for the basketball coach, but you are satisfied with a losing football coach? ? There's a hell of a lot of less people at the football games per capita. That's not than there are the basketball games. So why don't you back off of the basketball coach and complain about the football program? ?
Because football season's over.
Oh, come on. There's more there than just... All right, fine. Eldon Nelson. They should go for Fred Hoiberg, who just got fired from the Bulls today. Yeah, because we can't afford...
I think Fred Hoiberg was making $5 million as the coach of the Bulls.
Yeah, we might be able to pay him that if we sign him to a 15-year contract. Guy Nason, win! He's not wrong. Jason Wyckoff? How about lowering ticket prices? Make it affordable for families to go. Not many families want to spend $20 to $50 for bad seats to take their families to a game to see a team like this. Other years, yes, they would. This year, not so much. Dan Gerber wins. Jared Monk. Free kegs, hot dogs, and nachos. All right, he's now my favorite. I had read that far down. That guy is currently top seat. Marcus Goldsby, it's going to be hard to get butts in seats with VGK
in my opinion, unless UNLV really starts winning. If they do well in the Mountain West, it will be a good start.
We're running late, mate.
Brandon Buckner, $5 balcony tickets. They'll make it up for it on concession. First thing is to put butts into seats.
I love making you read. You're good. You don't have to read any more of them.
Taylor Obled wins. Dave Carlson, cheaper tickets.
There's a lot in there about cheaper tickets. I don't think it would help. Like, I think the amount of people that don't go because the ticket prices are too high is a small number. I think people don't go because the games aren't relevant. Like, UNLV's not winning. They're not playing great teams. And, like, so it's not important. So people aren't going to show up. When they play relevant games, people will show up regardless of what the ticket prices are. So, like, yes, you'd like to see cheaper ticket prices, but I don't think it would actually help that much in attendance.
So, like, my plan with UNLV football, schedule a bunch of SEC teams to come to Raider Stadium to kick the crap out of them?
Yeah. That would get more people to show up. They're just not playing relevant games. Oh, well. Let everybody in for free. Go approach the kids at middle school.
Yo, suck it,
Tyler!